Geekaholics, it's the Bad Dad Podcast.
Started. Go ahead.
All right, let's get started.
Welcome to Synthaholics. Thank you so much for downloading this episode. Today you have myself, Aaron O'Brien. We have David Duncan.
Hey, I got the Edo thong.
Woo! We have Holly Michelle.
Hello.
And we have returning guest Guy Davis from Geek Tank.
Hello.
How's it going?
Going well.
Awesome. We're doing pretty good, all locked up in our houses.
I still have to work, so.
I know some people still have to work.
I'm the germ-ridden one in this scenario.
Luckily, you're also the furthest away, I think.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I'm closer to you.
Yeah. You are closer to me. It is relative.
But you'd have to crawl over.
I think you're still like 3,000 miles from me.
Well, you're Colorado.
Yeah.
Denver. Yeah, I'm California.
He's in Denver, the last dinosaur.
Yep, Denver the last dinosaur. I am definitely a dinosaur.
Well, talking about
dinosaurs. He's my friend and a whole lot more.
Talking about dinosaurs, we are not talking about prehistoric animals. We are talking about cyborgs, especially Alita, the Battle Angel. Battle Anvil. This is a movie that was produced by James Cameron and John Lando and directed by Robert Rodriguez.
Machete and fame.
Machete and Sin City.
And Spy Kids.
Oh, yeah. There was Spy Kids, wasn't there?
Dawn of the Dead or something.
Battle Angel Alita was also a manga for quite a while, and I know I enjoyed it, and I think Guy enjoyed it far more than I did. Guy, could you give us the background of Alita?
Yeah, I mean, so I got into Gundam, which is what it was originally called in Japanese. I got into that back in the 90s. Probably, I want to say it was 93 or 94. Viz Communications brought over the manga, and I just loved Yukito Kishiro's artwork. And so I was, you know, as we have all discussed many times, I draw a lot. And he inspired a lot of my art. Kishiro and Mikimoto are two of my big inspirations. So the manga goes back to 1993, or I want to say 1990. 1990, in Shuin Shia's Business Jump. So he's been writing for a long, long time. Kishiro has. He's gone through three different series. There's Battle Angel, then there's Battle Angel Last Order. And then he's on this new one, which is, I'm gonna get the title right. In English, they're calling it Mars Chronicle, but I don't think it's actually called Mars Chronicle in Japanese. So I'll have to kind of look at that and see where that takes place there. But in they adapted it to an OAV in 93. An OAV is an original animation video, which means that it's not a full series of shows. It's only like two or four episodes. And it's interesting because the movie, the OAV was a great departure from the original series. There was the two episodes, the two manga that they adapted for the OAV was Rusty Angel and Tears Sign, which were the first two books. And that's roughly where they went with the movie as well. It's Rusty Angel, Tears Sign, but since it started with Motorball, that didn't start until after Tears Sign. So the Motorball section, so they kind of like bled a little bit into the next one. But there's a lot of things like Chirin is not a character in the manga at all, but she's that's a Connolly's character.
Yeah, right. the mother
but
figure.
She was a character that was invented in the OAV. So she was in the anime, but she wasn't in the actual manga.
Yeah, so, I was confused because I read the manga. I mean, the American version that came over, and I loved it. You know, I have the comic book size that came out as issues. I don't have a lot of them, but then I have the collections that are in the standard. Manga books. I don't know how many I have. I have at least four or five of them. I'm not sure how many there were, but I'm sure there's more than I have.
There are nine original books. There are 15 Last Order, and so far I think you're up to six on Mars Chronicle.
Okay, so I'm very far behind.
So. I'm poor, so I keep not getting the money to do Mars Chronicle.
Yeah,
and then they've been re-releasing these compilations, which are hardcover, and they're beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Well, I loved it, and I actually think that this movie did a great job of articulating, you know, what I remember reading in the manga into a live action movie. There are some scenes that I remember that maybe a little bit different, but I mean, it's like that's negligible for me. It's like, it's artistic license on top of it. So I think got the spirit right.
Yeah, I feel like some of the things they changed, I really thought were weird, but you know, but they're adapting it from the OVA. Like, it's funny the scenes that they took, like literally scene from scene.
Yeah, I never seen that. Yeah.
And I was like, huh, because like that Chiron crushes this cockroach in the OVA, and they put that into the movie, and I was like, okay. I mean, it's like it wasn't significant in the OVA, and it wasn't significant in the movie either.
It was just something to kind of bridge the two.
Yeah, it was like they were almost like, we're doing the OVA, just so you know. Okay.
They did some of that same stuff they did with Ghost in the Shell.
Well, hey, Jennifer Connelly had a rough time in Requiem for a Dream. Just, she got to take it on the cockroach.
Jesus. I can't see Jennifer Connelly and not see the girl from Labyrinth. I'm sorry. I mean, I know she's older now, but I just see her as the young girl in Labyrinth.
It's so funny you say that because I don't think about her that way, because when she was in the Labyrinth, she had a much, rounder face because she was younger. Yeah. And so I literally see them as two separate people.
They're two.
I do. I always forget who she is, and then when they say her name, I go, oh, yeah, she was in Labyrinth.
Whenever I hear Jennifer Connelly, I think Requiem for a Dream.
Oh, Jesus. The worst thing you could possibly think of, that, especially that last scene, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, yep, that's where I know Jennifer Connelly from, that heartbreaking scene.
Well, let's get into the full movie itself. So, they said, this is the movie Alita, the Battle Angel, and this movie came out on February 14th, 2019. And
I was there.
What were you?
Yep.
With bells on. I guess so. And it had the budget of $170 million, and it made $404.9 million worldwide. So it did okay. Didn't like.
Did not smash records by any means. I was actually honestly surprised the movie cost that little to make, considering there's CG in every second of the film.
Good CG.
And the sets, I don't know how much was CG'd on the sets, because I didn't see.
They built a lot of the sets.
It looked really, like, really there.
There was a lot of practical. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They didn't. There's a whole thing in like the special features of the film, but they didn't want it to feel wholly created. They wanted it to feel tangible and for the actors to be able to react to things, because Alita was not really, she's not really there.
I mean
Rosa Salazar did a great job bringing Gali to life, even though the eyes were kind of weird. It was a little difficult at that point in time, so I turned that down and it's still going. That's my alert to remind my child to go take a shower.
So
nice.
While we're talking about the eyes, let's just get that out of the way right off the bat.
So those of you guys who have read Battle Angel or Gundam, that's actually one of the things that the characters talk about her having. They actually often call her octopus lips. in the manga because she's got like really small mouth that's like really with fluffy lips or whatever, so she looks like she's an octopus. And she's got huge eyes and these octopus lips, and they're always talking about that in the manga. So I think if they had made her eyes normal, it would have been not true to the character, since the character's eyes were already out of proportion.
But the thing is, in anime and manga, everyone's got really big eyes and character things.
Yeah, but in some ways.
But they never referenced it in the movie, so I mean, they didn't need to make her eyes big. They could have saved a butt ton of money just having the actress there and the rest of her body be CG instead of all of her be CG.
I don't know. I think it helped. Remind you that she was a cyborg. The only thing about her that was hers was her brain. The rest of her is fabricated.
Yeah, I know.
Like, but, legitimately.
They said that throughout. But I mean,
that's the world.
They had the dude who only had the fake... His face wasn't even real. I mean, like...
But, you know, later on you see her... Well, I wouldn't say comrade. I guess it would be like her lieutenant or whoever it was that she was with. Same physical appearance.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's an interesting twist. That was something they added to the movie that isn't revealed until a long ways down.
Right.
All the stuff that went on in Mars is way in the back part of the story because it takes a long time for her to figure out who she is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I found that to be an interesting reveal. Because she spends, the first 6 or 7 volumes of the manga not knowing that she's from Mars.
Yeah. Right.
And then they reveal that she was a Martian fighter and a Martian warrior. And with her Panzerkunst, the fighting style, it's because they had people had figured it out. They were like, gosh, that's like a Martian fighting style you've got going there. And she's like, yeah, I must have picked it up somewhere, you know. But, you know, it's kind of like she dismissed it. And then at some point in time, they're like, no, we think you came from Mars. You know?
The only thing I didn't like is, I don't want to get it too far into the weeds, but she doesn't play music. And
yeah, she doesn't start that one until book 3, too. But that's the same thing, right? She starts, she goes and plays music at the bar. And then that works up until they taunt her into roller derby.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did she have a love interest? Well, I know Hugo was in the comics. Were they actually like supposed to be like an item?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were.
Yeah. Hugo actually is her love interest for the first two books.
Mm.
Because that when he dies, spoiler alert. When he dies, that sets her up. When he falls that's the end of him. But Hugo is set up to be that way because she meets Figure 4 later on in the story and starts to kind of get into a love interest with him. But then she's like, "Nah, I've already had my one relationship for my life."
Sort of thing.
She's like, "I'm good."
Yeah.
And then she gets tangled up with Figure 4 anyway. But that's beside the point.
But going back to her eyes and her face, mm-hmm. I feel like all the CG with people's faces on robots, regular-looking mm-hmm. faces, worked way better from the uncanny seamless angle versus hers. Hers always took me out of it a little bit because it's not... I don't know if we're quite there. We're close. Like, Tarkin wasn't quite there. Alita's not quite there. Leia wasn't quite there. Like, it's like we're on the cusp of it, but we're not quite there yet. So every time I saw her face, it didn't work. The only human's face that didn't work on a robot's body was Hugo's. That was, I guess, since it was such a short scene.
Yeah, not great.
It was such a short scene. I guess they didn't try very hard on that one. But all the other ones were so, they look so great.
I don't know.
Think about that, too. Sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, think about that, too, though. If they made her look superhuman, it may not have looked as interesting.
I would have preferred not looking at the Uncanny Valley the entire movie.
The what?
Uncanny Valley.
Yeah, it's a term of like when a robot looks almost human but not quite human, and it gives you that kind of off feeling. So like if you ever see like there's Sophia, these robots that look
Sophia, the robot that wants to destroy humanity.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good example of it. Older video games, older CGI of anything. It's all like, I mean, even still modern CG, like it's uncanny because it's like you can tell it's not quite right.
Yeah, it's like, it's just this thing where you're something about you feels off because it's close to human, but it's not quite human. So you have this kind of like weird feeling when you look at it. They call it the Uncanny Valley. So
I liked it. So
I liked it too. I thought it was a weird choice. Because I thought the actress Rosa Salazar, I thought she looks like her anyways. I mean, she even without her eyes,
she's got pretty big eyes naturally.
Yeah, and she looks like her. Like if you see the comic, but I always take it as manga. Everything's a little accentuated anyways in manga. It's a little cartoony.
That's what I'm saying. Like they didn't do that to Scarlett Johansson in Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
Hey, we don't talk about Ghost in the Shell.
Ghost in the Shell was way better than this.
Oh, man. Now you're hurting me.
Geek but, Fight. Ghost in the Shell had an ending. This movie just stopped.
Well, it did stop. It stops with Destiny Nova.
It stops in like Act 1.5.
Well, and that's because really there's no way you can follow this entire arc. What each one of these books is 300 pages about? Let me look.
Wow.
Yeah. They're long. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, each one of these is 300 pages, and there is, maybe 200. 200, but still, there's 9 of them. That's 1,800 pages.
God. Right.
Right. Yeah.
That's a lot. There's a lot of story in there. That's an insane number of stories, and she goes through a lot of evolutions, which is why I was kind of surprised they went to Rollerball. The OVA sort of decided to stop before the Rollerball section.
The Rollerball section in the manga gets a little like, all right, can we just move on a little bit?
You can see that Dragon Ball had just come out, and he was doing very much Dragon Ball's popular. I'll be. So it's, Alita versus Grushka, Alita versus the next dude, and Alita versus the next dude. So,
Well, and just so you know, Dave, there have been talks that Cameron Rodriguez said they're going to do more sequels of this. So they definitely want to do Battle Angel 2.
Cameron Rodriguez?
Oh, I hope.
And James Cameron.
I was like.
And Robert Rodriguez.
Their new son that was genetically built between the two of them. I hope they do, because it is super unfulfilling watching this movie that's only an act and a half. And I'm just like, what? That's it? Like, there's no final battle? There's no, resolution? It's just like, it just stops. I was like, oh my god. Where's the rest of the movie?
I'm sure it's going to make it difficult to be accessible.
That and Fox is owned by Disney now, and Disney is the one who holds the keys to whether or not this actually gets a sequel or not at this point. Right. So, I mean, it could be the last, and it's good to hear that there's rumblings, but I haven't noticed any rumblings myself, because I look at movie news sites, and I've never seen anything about a rumbling for this, personally.
Right. Well, and here, there's one more thing that's kind of important, which is James Cameron wanted to do this in the late 90s, in the early 2000s. I think the first time that he announced he was going to do this movie was like 2003. So, I mean, his whole thing was the technology wasn't there yet. And so he couldn't do it in 2003.
It's amazing he did this movie, since he's working on 16 Avatar sequels.
Well, but that's the thing he did Avatar, and after he got the first hurdle of Avatar, then he was like, okay, now we can do Alita, but he was too busy, so that's why he got Robert Rodriguez to direct it. So that's the reason behind Cameron not directing this movie.
Machete, don't tweet.
But anyway, I don't know. I think there's going to be another movie in the future. It might be 5 years in the future, but
right. But this one took 16 years to even start filming.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's still, it's, I mean, come on, this, I don't know. Let's get into it. Let's get into the whole movie. Let's go into the breakdown. Right?
Go to the breakdown.
We started at Eyes.
Eyes. So we are in the future, and it is 2563, and Earth,
which has, I absolutely just want to interject, and I love the fact that they changed the 20th century Fox to 26th century Fox.
It was all beat up.
That made me happy.
So there was a great war and left Earth into a huge mess. And there's this giant junkyard that's built around a floating city. The junkyard surrounded by a city that's called Iron City. So, and we see a scientist, a guy who, if
scavenging you know, the parts.
Yeah, Christoph Waltz.
He's the Jew hunter from...
Yes.
Inglorious Bastards. And he builds the finest women out of garbage.
Yeah. So he's Dr. Dyson Ito, and he discovers Alita's kind of like torso and head. So he's scavenging, he finds this. So Dr. Ito is a cyberneticist, and he seems like he's just kind of working for like the community, because it seems like everyone in the movie is missing an arm, so they have a cybernetic appendage. So,
I like how he gets the Nerf clip, the clip arm on that one guy. He's like, it's the best I've got.
Yeah, I know. He's like, that guy was broke. He had no money. So, so he goes, he scavenges her and puts her back together, and then we don't realize it, but he has this extra body, cybernetic body, and attaches her to it, and she wakes up and realizes that she's in a bed, and meets Dr. Ito, and he's like, we found you, we don't know anything about you, and she doesn't know anything about herself either, so she has complete and she has no memory, she has a blank slate. When Dr. Ito takes her around the neighborhood outside of his clinic, meets a friend named Hugo. Hugo is a young kid, and she seems pretty smitten with him right off the bat. So so during this time, they're running around, and she runs around with Hugo a little bit and gets to know Hugo, plays a little like a street ball game of motorball with some kids in the neighborhood. And that's where he kind of shows her his private place up on this rooftop, and shows them Zalem is that giant city that floats up above, and nobody can go up to the city, and nobody knows anything about the people above. They're up there. They throw their trash down, and that's about all they know.
Well, they all work downhill. They all work to supply Zalem. They all work in the factory, and if they're working, they're pretty much supporting Zalem, and that's how they make a living.
But you're right. Yeah, they can't go up there.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone wants to go up there, and that's Hugo wants to get up there somehow. He wants to buy a ticket up there. So
the rain's yellow for some reason.
it's snowing turds again, Mom.
It's hailing.
Never
turds,
considered
Aaron.
where the waste goes.
Hey, we know where it goes.
Maybe it goes down a different chute.
It's like I said, it's yellow rain. When it all collects into one central reservoir, and then it rains on the poor people of Steel City.
So during this time, Alita's just kind of like getting her bearings. And the one time she sees Dr. Ito coming home late, and he's got a suitcase, and it looks like he had hurt himself. He cut himself. So she's a little piques her interest, and she's starts wondering what's going on with him.
But she waits 16 hours before she talks to him about it, even though she spends most of the day with him.
There's this, unfortunately, there's some killings going around in the city, and women especially, and they don't want Dr. Ito doesn't want her going out late at night. So the one evening she is out with Hugo for a little bit too long, and she kind of gets chastised by Dr. Ito when she comes home. So there's a little bit of I guess, father-daughter fight a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which was kind of weird that he, you know, he gave her this body that he had, and then he named her
after his daughter. That
after
died.
His daughter, and you see this exchange between him and his assistant, and you can just tell. Like, I hope you guys could just tell that it was definitely a child's body, and that he was giving her a name that belonged to somebody else. Like, did you guys catch that when you watched it, or did it like unfold for you?
I caught right away that when he called her Alita, that it meant something more to him than what she knew, and and the body part. I don't know. I mean, there's some things that I knew about
that
it
you anyway, already knew. So, I guess that's right. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but it's different in the manga.
It is
because the arms are from that prostitute in the manga.
Right.
And so
prostitute arms.
Right. Well, I mean, it was, that's one of
the dicks these arms have touched.
Set it up so it looked like Ito was doing the killings.
Oh, okay.
We start out with this prostitute with these beautiful scroll worked arms, and then she gets killed, and then later on you see Golly with the arms with the same scroll work.
I just have one thing to say.
And that's one of the changes that I actually liked that they made. The other one was he originally named Golly after his cat. In the manga, he named her after his cat. I like it a whole lot better than he named it after. But, I mean, Chirin doesn't exist in the manga, so there's, you know.
Yeah.
There was that connection didn't exist.
Right, right.
The anime.
Yeah, so later on, Alita discovers that Ito is the guy, why he's sneaking out at night with his suitcase is that he's a hunter warrior, which is basically a bounty hunter. And this one night she goes out and follows him that he encounters these three cyborg like assassins. Yeah. And there's this Alita's first little hesitant to join the fight because she doesn't know what her fighting skills are yet. And when she sees that Dr. Ito is in trouble, then she jumps in and she just completely wipes out these three assassins.
I think it was, I don't know that it was like she saw him, was concerned, and then went into action. I think, and it started a few scenes before this where she did go back for the puppy. But like when she feels threatened, she's very like she automatically goes into a very defense mode.
Right.
And so I think she was like standing in the alley while he was being attacked. And I think the woman went after her, and that's when she kind of was like, okay.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, but I mean, it's, she's definitely went into her, you know, full battle mode right there. Mm-hmm. And, so there is a larger, cyborg in there that gets away at the very end that although she definitely repels him, he gets away because he's
pansy ass.
Well, he's definitely going to work out. He's going to fight her later on, so
yeah. But she gets a vision of a memory while she's fighting him.
Yes, and she's on the moon, correct?
Yeah.
Looked like she was on
I don't think she knew where she was. She just knew she was in battle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They fought a battle on the moon many years ago. Yeah. And so that's the reference to that.
Many moons ago.
Many moons ago. So
not the moon of Mars at all.
Then she goes, she goes with Ito to, collect his bounty as a warrior hunter, and basically it seems like the police don't do much of anything. They just kind of hand out the law through these warrior hunters that basically take care of people who have done something wrong, and he collects his money, and he goes, my clinic would have shut down a long time ago if it wasn't for this money.
Batman needs to live here.
Yeah, exactly. So from there we go down to Hugo decides he's going to take Alita out and brings her to an old ship that crashed that was outside the city in this lake. And Alita decides that she's going to jump down into the bottom of the lake and see what's going on inside the ship. So the ship was from Mars, right? I got that right. There was a Martian ship that was in there.
And only she could open it.
Right.
Battle Angel from Mars and women are from Venus.
I was just going to say, though, I think while this is going on, we're still... I think it's important to mention Ito's ex-wife.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah. Chirin.
Chirin.
Yeah, played by Jennifer Connelly.
She's hanging out with Discount Wesley Snipes.
Discount Wesley Snipes? How do I handle that?
Oh, my God.
Every time I saw him, he just looks like a Discount Wesley Snipes. That's what he looks like.
He does kind of look similar, I guess, yeah.
Ashara Ali, who was in... Iron Fist. That's I think I have that right. He was he played God, what was his name? Not Constrictor in
Iron Fist. I saw him watched Iron Fist.
Not Iron Fist. Oh, I'm stupid. Luke Cage. Oh, jeez, can't believe I couldn't remember that.
Oh yeah. He wasn't Luke Cage. That's right. I thought he was a Discount Wesley Snipes there too.
Anyways. He's a good actor.
I like him. He was a good actor. He did a good job.
He did fine. It's just like his vibe is so Wesley Snipes, though. He looks like Blade.
Half of the episode, he's like, actually, what's his name?
Nova.
Nova?
Nova. Nova, yeah.
He's usually Edward Norton. I didn't even realize it was Edward Norton until he took his glasses off the second before the movie ended.
I know, I couldn't.
I love that. That was so funny because Nova doesn't actually have eyes. That's an implant. So I like the taking his eyes off.
Yeah.
For those of us that are like, I was like watching, I was like, the hell? Because that's, he just took his eyes off.
Jennifer Connelly's character and Mahershala Ali, they're working together.
To get drugs. Movie.
Well, Jennifer Connelly...
She thinks he can get her to Zalem.
Yes. He's going to get her into a ticket to go to Zalem. And he does... He also runs kind of the rollerball kind of thing, the professional sport. So he's got connections all throughout the black market and the cybernetic underworld and stuff like that. So
what I found interesting about... the fact that she was trying to get back to Zalem, and it's probably different in the books because she doesn't exist in the book, right?
Yeah,
she doesn't exist in the books.
I just thought it was interesting that, like, so she and Ito are both from Zalem, and they were on the ground on the planet because their kid was sick. So when their kid died, they couldn't go back to Zalem. Like, I just find that weird that, like. I get why Ito would stay, and they separated, but why wouldn't she get to go back to Zalem? It's just interesting.
I think when she leaves Zalem, that's it, right?
I don't know. Maybe they don't want disease up there.
It's a one-way ticket. Yeah, when you get flushed down the toilet, you don't get to go back up.
Right.
So in the book, just so we can quickly kind of go back on this one, in the books, Ito left Typhira's because Zalem. Because, by the way, this is one of those manga and anime that got a half translation. Anime and manga in the 80s and the 70s, they would, like, change everything. They would change all the words. They would change everything. And then the anime fans got kind of mad at them for that. And so you'd end up with anime that came over in partial translation. So Gali became Alita. And Zalem, or Typhares became Zalem. Mm-hmm. And so I read like an original translation which had Gali and Typhares. So sometimes I slip, and I'm sorry.
The manga still said Typhares. So that's why Zalem kind of like.
Right. Zalem comes from the dub of the LD that I gave a copy to David. Because that's the dub. On there calls it Zalem, and the subtitles called it Zalem too.
Typhoris sounds cooler.
It does. That's what I thought.
Yeah,
I actually like Gali too, because Gali is just the way I know her, and so Alita is kind of a strange name because I know her as Gali. Because at some point in time I learned Japanese, and now I just read it in Japanese, and so it's that's one of those stupid human tricks.
Well, right? but Alita is all I knew, so that's because they always called her that through the. Yeah. I mean, the title was Alita. So
there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but I slip up, and so I'm just apologizing for slipping up.
You're a horrible person for doing that.
I know. But yeah, so in the original story, Ito came down. He was banished from Typhares, and so that's why he was in Scrapyard City, and that's why he recognized Golly when he saw her, because she was still alive,
mm-hmm.
which he never found in the Scrapyard.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's another theme I want to get into. Think about this, mull this over, but Milton's Paradise Lost very much feels like, and there's even a quote from Paradise Lost in this too.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? Does it? Marsha Ali says, "Better to rule in hell than to serve in heaven." So, anyways, so going back to the ship that's on the bottom of the lake.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
So Alita goes down there and she activates the ship when she gets down there, and she finds the berserker body that's there. This is a cybernetic constructive.
I loved the scene.
Suit. Yeah, it was pretty cool. And she brings it up and they're like, oh, what is that?
Right, right. Oh, this is going to be bad. Oh, gosh, she's carrying an empty body. What is this?
Yeah. So. She brings it to Ito. Ito does not want to put this body onto her because she's just.
Because he explains what it is and what she is, and he's like, no.
I think he's more afraid of what she's gonna trouble she's gonna get herself.
Exactly.
Into.
Yeah.
Which she goes up and does anyways, because after Ito says no to her, Alita
goes. She's a rebellious teenager.
She goes to register as a hunter warrior, and she goes down to the bar where the hunter warriors all hang out and asks her to take down that big cybernetic assassin.
Oh, sweet naive Alita.
Grushka. And they just kind of laugh at her, like, what are you talking about?
Like, because we're not going up again. Like, they didn't want to say it, but they were all terrified of him.
Yeah. And so because of this, she goes down with Hugo as well. And this is where she, yes, go ahead.
Also, Grushka was wanted, and he was on the hunter warrior list, and he vanished the night after Alita fought him, and he was repaired, and this is where he shows up at that bar. But he was repaired by what's her name and
Taryn.
And what's his name?
Well, Nova, but. Yeah, Vector is his name, but Nova's the guy who's kind of pulling the strings. He's
pulling the strings, yeah.
Yeah, usually we didn't meet Destiny Nova until a long time later. Yeah. But this is also where she runs into Zippon in the movie.
Yes, and while I didn't dislike the version of Zippon, I kind of liked the manga version better.
Yeah.
He's more scarier in the manga version. But... I mean, they did good. I mean, it was still like it's a character you could kind of like follow, and I liked how they did it. But I mean,
enjoy hating.
Yeah, but in the manga, he's scary. He's a scary.
Yeah, he's pretty terrifying in the manga, and he does a lot of look. It's illegal for me to kill you, but it's not illegal for me to harass you and make your life miserable. You know, sort of stuff. And it's like, because he's a bully. It's interesting because he gets killed off in the OAV in a very different way, too. So it's like a different way in everything. Mm-hmm. You know?
I mean, I they did a good job with it. I just was like, I like the Zippon from the manga a little bit more, I think. I think that was scarier.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
Well, when she's at the bar... she tangles with Zippon, and then a whole bunch of other people. A huge bar fight breaks out.
Great.
And
I love the dog hunter warrior.
The dog hunter warrior.
Yeah. He was awesome.
Man, the Dog Hunter Warrior was great, but he in the OAV, that was a brutal scene because she had the puppy with her at the time. And the first thing that Zippon did was kill the poor Grushka. First thing Grushka did was kill the puppy. And that's what brought the Dog Hunter Warrior in, because the Dog Hunter Warrior wasn't going to stand for anybody killing dogs.
Right.
You could kill people, but not the dogs.
Well, and it's obvious because he's got, you know, what, 3 cybernetic hounds, cyberhounds, or whatever?
3 or 4, yeah.
Yeah, so the cyberhounds were, you know, that, but he was clearly a dog person.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that scene in the OAV is not safe for life. It's just horrible. Still traumatizes me.
I did like how at this point we didn't see any memory of Alita, like, knowing about the marks on their faces.
Mm-hmm.
But she did that instinctively, and then you see it later on.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really cool that they did that without showing a flashback.
Was she dips her finger in the blood of the dog and does that across her face. And then she's like, that's it.
I'm ready for football.
Yeah. And that's when she goes after Grushka.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, during the fight, Ito shows up in the bar fight, and then Grushka shows up as well. And this is where they smash down into, like, the sub basements of the Iron City.
Below the boxes.
And there was this big fight, and unfortunately, Alita, she gets hacked to pieces by Grushka and into Swiss cheese. And at the very last minute, Ito shows up with the dog hunter, and they kind of, like, get him out of there, you know, get away from Alita so they can save Alita. So, and then this is where Ito brings her back to the clinic and puts on the berserker body. So,
puts her in it.
Yeah. Yeah. However, but yeah, she's attached to the berserker body from there on. So, the body is way more advanced than anything that Ito's ever seen. It's kind of nanotech. It can, like, it kind of, like, changes to her own self image.
Subconscious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's far stronger. It's far more. It's just more amazing than anything that Ito's ever seen. So
got this sick plasma thing that it can do.
Yeah. Yeah. And they copy the scenes from the manga where she's, like, balancing on her fingertip and doing a bunch of other weird stuff.
I know.
So I was like, wow, that's pretty great cool. That was what they did. So then after that, the other thing we didn't really get into is Hugo is kind of tied into Vector and his underworld. And he goes and hacks up cyborgs for parts.
Yeah.
So he's in a running with a bad crowd during this time. So as sweet as he seems, he's kind of bad too. He takes Alita before this, all happens to a, not cyberball. What are they called? So
rollerball.
Thank you. Like an actual, like a professional, match.
Mm-hmm.
And she loves it. So she wants to,
she loves murder for the sake of murder. This sport has no rules. If you just kill everyone, don't you automatically win? You don't have to use the ball.
So it is interesting because the Hunter Warriors have a code, and clearly in the story, the setup here is that the Deckmen, which were those weird little robots, they're called Deckmen.
Mm-hmm.
The Deckmen just assign whether you have violated the code. If you violate the code, they just assign all the Hunter Warriors to kill you. Mm-hmm. So it makes it pretty simple. They just have this sort of bounty hunter concept. You know, it's cheaper to pay bounty hunters to kill people who have done wrong. And so we just put out a bounty on them and it's done. And so that's why there's no police. There are police, but they're these huge, like, four-legged mechs that walk around that are super destructive, which, of course...
They pretty much no law and codes, but they don't do anything.
Right. But Golly can pretty much wipe them out pretty easy, so they're not much of a stopping point for her. But yeah.
So. Well, Alita is in love with Hugo, and after she gets her new body, she comes and meets up with Hugo at some point, and at his place, which was
whips out her heart and hands it to him.
She does. Right. She takes out her heart and says, "You could just sell this, and you could get to Zalem." And he's like, "What are you talking about?" It was a great. Which, it was kind of a funny scene because, like, she goes, "That was pretty intense, wasn't it?" He goes, "Yeah."
Which so
usually when girls undo their shirts, I see boobs.
So before this heart. Point, before this point, we see, but Alita doesn't know. We see that Hugo is actually part of this crew that's been paralyzing cyborgs and cutting off their parts and
right.
selling them off or giving them to Vector or whoever pays them for it.
But when this happened, that's critical because if these guys were found to have killed them, it would have violated. They would have set up a bounty.
Right, right. Now, when this happens, there was a point where Hugo took Alita to the games. It turns out he knows all the mechanics there. And he knows Vector. Vector kind of takes him under his wing and promises to put him up in Zalem, but he wants Alita. And then she kind of goes to his room and she's like, "Here, you can sell my heart. We can go to Zalem." And at this point, you're not sure if he's gonna take it.
Right.
Yoink.
Fine. Dibs. So I just thought it was important to kind of point out those little things. Because a lot happens in the movie, even though there's like a main plot. And there are all these little things that are happening all over that are important.
Sure, yeah, like absolutely. Her heart is a special fusion reactor.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's
sort of like Tony Stark's thing.
Right, yeah.
It's a warp drive engine. What are you talking about? Is that antimatter?
It is, but... The reason that she's so powerful is because she's got that specific fusion reactor. Yeah. So that's one of the reasons why she said that. She was like, "Hey, everybody will want one of these. You know, you might as well take it."
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But he does.
Getting from her is a little bit difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, and he refuses it. He says, "No, I can't do that." So she's. It's cute in its way. It's a little freaked out too because she's very intense about the whole thing. But she's very just like, "Take my heart."
Kind of like creepy girlfriend obsessive.
About yeah, it. But still, like you feel like she's completely genuine. So that's that's what's great about her. That you're just like she's there's nothing phony about her. So,
right.
She's very innocent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So. So that happens between those two, and Alita then she enters into play motorball, even though Dr. Ito didn't want her to join, but he does end up helping her out, so getting her kind of set up. So during that time, Vector, because he knows these are tryouts for rollerball, he hires a bunch of like cyborg
warriors,
like assassin fighter kinds that to take her out during the fight. Because this is what Nova, the guy that the mastermind behind this all is setting this up. So
right, whoever wins Motorball goes up to Zalem, and he doesn't want Alita going up to Zalem.
Right, and so they're all getting set to fight. During that time, when she's getting ready to play the motorball game, Hugo's not there. He's going to go tell his crew that he's not going to do this anymore. And so I kind of thought that was bad timing. You could have done that before.
Terrible after. Timing.
Yeah, I was like, why didn't he do this right now?
After,
Why'd you choose this moment?
Why did he have to say anything at all?
He chooses this moment to get a shoulder injury and then do tons of parkour as if he doesn't have a shoulder injury.
I felt the same thing, David.
So,
like, you cannot pull yourself up on that guardrail like that.
When your shoulder has been crushed and stabbed by about 16 claws, that's...
Yeah.
No.
Well, so she, when Hugo goes to tell his crew he's out, who shows up is Zepan, and he kills his friends, his crews, and stuff like that, and then kills the cyborg that they were jacking at the moment, and blames, or somehow gets...
I don't know how he did that.
Well, he's tied in with Vector and what's his name?
Zepan did that in the manga, as I recall. He pinned it on Gali.
Okay.
Mm. I seem to remember that he pinned it on Gali.
Yeah. So
it wasn't a good thing. He managed to pin it on.
But so, how did he manage to do it in the comics? Because it wasn't really clear how he managed to do it in.
It's been so long since I've read these comics. Going back through it now.
In the movie, I just assumed that somehow Zepan,
like a weapon
and Vector were kind of like tied together, and Vector was running some was somehow tied in with the Warrior Hunters as well. So, yeah,
that makes sense.
Somehow he pulled the strings for that. And during that time when all that was going on, Alita basically enters the motorball race and starts, and obviously it's just pandemonium, and she's taking out people, and then they're fighting for real, like they're gonna kill her, so they're all like gunning for her.
Pretty fun scene.
It's really fun scene, actually, and the action is amazing here as well. And this is where, at some point, after Hugo gets away from Zepan, after being, like you said, his shoulders crushed, he's running for his life, and he calls Alita and is like, I'm in trouble. Will you save me?
Right.
And I'm just like, oh, what are you doing? What are you doing? Right in the middle of this. She's right in the middle of this thing to get you to your city. And you dummy, you started all this stuff, so.
Right.
So she goes through this. She breaks out of the motorball race
arena.
Yeah. And she's going through the city. All these cyborg assassins chasing after her from the motorball tournament. And
I love how nobody cares. They're just like, OK, well,
they're gone.
I guess the game's over.
Next tryout.
Next.
So they all take off and they're running through the city, and Alita, she runs into some, like, she gets cornered at some point, but she gets, you know, she takes care of them pretty easily.
As a side note real quickly here, I'm in the manga. It looks like Zepan reports Hugo for killing off the cyborg.
So it's as easy as that.
Yeah, he says, slippery little snake. I'm not worried, though. Revenge is best served cold, not in the heat of the moment. And what better way for Romeo to meet his end than at the hands of his sweet Juliet?
Nice.
So
makes sense. Because that's kind of how it works out.
To Alita, and he knows he's going to be able to find her. And so.
Right. Well, and that's kind of how it works out. So when Alita finally catches up with Hugo, they're outside this church, and this is where Zepan shows up with a bunch of those mechs and a couple other hunter warriors. And they're like, you're a hunter warrior. He's wanted. You got to take him out. And so she goes into the church, and this is where, he's like, this is it. I'm dead. Don't worry about it, you know, just let me go kind of thing. And she won't let it, won't let that happen. And this is where, what's her name? Sharon comes in, and she's basically feels all of a sudden like
motherly.
Move to do something, you know, other than being kind of, I don't know.
She snapped sort of out of her haze from the end of Requiem for a Dream. Finally.
He's stuck on this.
Yeah.
So I can feel emotions again. Oh my gosh.
She decides.
From what I understand, it was supposed to be a kind of a journey for her to go from this selfish person who all she wanted to do was go back to Zalem to kind of become a mother again after losing their daughter to her illness. She didn't die from an illness, but you know.
Yeah,
the crazy cyborg. Yeah. So this was supposed to be her mother moment.
And she realized, too, when she heard Hugo say talking about what Vector promised, that he would get her a ticket, get him a ticket.
She was promised the same thing, and she knew he wasn't going to Zalem, so...
Yeah, he's like, Hugo's not going to Zalem, and if that he's not going to Zalem, I'm not going to Zalem. So she's like, fuck Vector, fuck Nova.
Right. So,
and if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit.
That's right. So she ends up cutting off his head... off screen and hooking it onto Alita's heart's cybernetic system so he can survive for that moment. So when she walks out and she's cradling his head under a jacket, and Zippon sees it and then sees that, you know, he's hooked up.
Technically alive, yeah. But they buy it. The bots buy it. They think he's dead.
They think he's dead. And when Zippon tries to stop her, she just takes his sword and just cuts his face right off. So,
my face! My face.
It's pretty graphic, actually.
That was awesome. I loved it.
You love that, huh?
Well, considering that in the manga, the violence level in this manga is so ridiculously high.
Oh, it's, yeah. It's,
really?
I mean, it's much darker than the movie, yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, I mean, yeah. Like, when I was talking about that,
it should have been rated R for sure.
She whatever hits her in the head just demolishes her head. And, you know, it's like eyeballs and stuff flying everywhere. And you're like, okay. And you're like, well, this is the way we're going to set this manga. Like, you know, during the rollerball scene, as an android, you're totally, you know, anything can be put back together except your brain.
Right.
And so during rollerball, that's their thing, is to cut the tops of the heads off so that the brain gets smeared across the road. It's like, oh god,
I win.
This is the way to do this, because of course you can't come back from that,
right?
Again, the sport has no rules. How is it a sport?
So what I also
just Gladiator,
the other differences that they did with this was Alita in the manga pulls up a team, like this team of you know, her team of rollerball or motorball, so she could have, you know, because you have to have a team of defense six, whatever. And,
yeah.
In the movie,
like roller derby, to
throw her out there by herself, you know. But she, of course, in the it makes sense in the manga, the team that she picks are a whole bunch of losers, because she can beat everybody, so she doesn't really need anybody else. So she's like annoyed she has to get a team anyway.
Right. Right.
And so Golly just rounds up all of these losers. But I've always loved the little tank guy, because he was like this pathetic character. He's, I'm trying, Golly, I'm trying. And he's like, always, it's just very adorable. So,
yeah, well, so I mean, roller, or what is it? Not rollerball. I keep calling it rollerball. It's
motorball.
It does have rules, because you're supposed to get the ball and you're supposed to, you know, put it into whatever, that little hole or whatever.
Into the trash can. But if you kill everyone else, it doesn't matter. You don't need the ball anymore.
True. Exactly. So
just wait.
Put it in the trash can at that point. So
I'm sure it's got laps.
The ball also attacks you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the ball also is like, if you don't follow the rules, the ball will attack you.
Oh, that's
cool. So... It's
a whole bunch of games and things all mushed together.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing. I love the world building in this.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff going on. And, so Ito transplants Hugo's head onto a cyborg's body, and then after she sees that he's okay, she's like, "I'm taking out Vector." So she goes. She goes to Vector's office.
Well, she wants to take out Nova.
Yeah, exactly. But so she goes to Vector's office, which is above the Hunter Warriors, like whatever their main base. So he's working with them somehow. And just before that, we see Sharon come in and say, I'm out. I don't want to do this anymore. So. And then, what's his, Grushka shows up.
He right turned her the eyes, brains, and hands. Can I see my eyes, brain, and hands, doctor?
So Alita shows up, totally tears apart the hunter base, and then goes to Vector's office, and then tears up Grushka, has a fight with him, cuts him in half, and then finally gets to Vector, and this is where she tells Nova, I want to talk to Nova, and Nova comes through. So through Vector, Nova talks to her for a little bit, and basically saying, like, you know, they're both just saying, we're going to kill each other, and you shouldn't have made me as an enemy, kind of thing. So, because you underestimated her. And then she kills Vector, and Vector dies. Actually, I do think that what's his name? Mahershala Ali did an awesome job acting, because he'd be in like fear or pain, and then all of a sudden he just like straighten up when Nova would take over and would act like no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, that death scene was great, because he was dying and he's still talking, but you could tell us still he was like the physical form was.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was really good acting.
He did a good job.
Almost then, like he's an actor.
Almost.
Oh, strange.
So weird.
So after that happens, Alita goes back to Ito. Ito says that Hugo took off, and he's trying to climb up to Zalem. And Alita goes to catch up with Hugo, and he's on one of those giant umbilical cords holding the city in place, or whatever you want to call it, you know, balloon, rope, or whatever. And
I assume they're all part of like the tube system that runs product up to Zalem. That's what I just assume.
Yep. Those are product tubes. And everything that's manufactured in Scrapyard City and everywhere else around goes up those tubes to Typhara's. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that Typhara's isn't actually hovering. At one point in time, it was connected to the Earth. It's it's an orbital elevator. There's another city up there called Ketheres, which is in orbit. And Typhara's and Ketheres are tied together through a space elevator.
Yeah, you can almost see. You can't see the top of that spindle or the elevator that you're talking about.
Right.
When they show it, you can see that it just keeps going and going and going.
Yeah, there's another city up in orbit called Ketheres, and they're tied together. So Ketheres is actually in geosynchronous orbit, and it's so that's a huge elevator. And it used to have, Typhara's used to be connected to the ground, but then they cut it in the war so that people wouldn't get to Typhara's.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Alita shows up, to catches up with Hugo, who is climbing up this giant tube or whatever you want to call it. And when she tries to basically say, hey, this isn't going to work. And then one of their defense systems that she remembered from her past in a pass fight, that this huge, like these razor blades flying around this giant tube comes down on them. And while Alita can jump over it, Hugo's body's not strong enough or fast enough to jump over it. And he gets cut into pieces. And so it's just his arm and his torso and his head that's all attached. And he slides off.
You find out that's how Alita wound up in the scrapyard.
Yeah, she definitely got cut up. She has Zapan's sword and kind of uses it as a brake to keep it from them falling as they're sliding down this side of the, what do we want to call it? A tether? Anyways.
Those are tubes.
Tubes. Giant tubes. Enormous tubes. Anyways, she's holding on his hand and obviously.
They tied my tubes.
Hugo's arm is already falling apart, and they get to say a little bit of a goodbye, but unfortunately, you know, Hugo's arm is not built strong enough and breaks, and he falls to his death. And
thanks, Judge Ito.
So,
which is pretty sad, because he's like cut off at the torso and he only has the one arm, so like the fact that he's heavy enough to break the arm joint.
Yeah, it's the worst body.
A little comedic there.
Oh, Ito even said he didn't have a body to spare, so he kind of slapped one together real quick to hold them together for until they could figure out a better body. And Hugo just didn't want to wait.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, unfortunately, Hugo dies, and then we jump to the future. Alita's now in the motorball tournament, and she's sort of like the big star, and so the crowd's cheering for her, and she, at the very last scene, she points her sword up towards Zalem, and we see, like you said, Nova's up there.
Plasma thing.
In the flesh. And
he's not eating flan. I don't know.
He's not eating flan.
Right?
You're always eating flan, yeah. And like you said, he takes off his glasses, and it's Edward Norton. So I can only assume Edward Norton wouldn't make a cameo unless he was a huge fan or he knew he was going to be in the next movie. So,
well, the series is phenomenal. The books are really good. And the anime was actually somewhat popular in that first generation of hardcore anime fans that we had in the 90s. I know that Cameron fell in love with this series through the OAV, which is why the movie follows the OAV with Sharon and, you know, the family that Ito never had in the manga and stuff like that, which is fine. Actually, like that Gali is named after Ito's daughter, mm-hmm. as opposed to being named after Ito's cat, which is what it is in the manga. It's actually deeper and makes more sense. When you talked about this, I start to think that I think what they did was they took Hugo's story and merged it with Ito. Because I don't know if you remember, Aaron, reading the manga, Hugo's older brother tried to build an airship to fly to Teferis. And
yeah, I somewhat remember that. Hugo was such a goofball in the manga. It was
right. But Hugo had a scar on his wrist,
mm-hmm.
and Gali asked, "What's the scar from?" And he said, "My brother tried to build an airship, and the deckman shot it down." And he survived, but then a hunter warrior came and killed him. Mm-hmm. And I tried to kill the hunter warrior, but I was only like, you know, 10 years old or whatever. And so the hunter warrior just cut off my hand, mm-hmm. as a warning. And they put it back on, but that's where this. So, you know, Hugo also had that, you know, the family was killed by a hunter warrior. And, you know, there was a bitterness to that and stuff like that. So I think they just merged those two together with Ito to give him more pathos.
Right.
Because Ito is a goofball. I mean, he rescues Gali, but the names are after his cat. You know,
so he's just sort of just a mad scientist. I remember. Yeah. I mean, he's pretty harmless, nice guy, but
sounds you like know, something Master Roshi would early on from Dragon Ball Z.
You have to give Kishiro some room. I mean, you know, he's written this huge epic, but he started out just being some kid, you know, hanging out, drawing robot girls, you know. Right. And he's like, I probably should put a story around my robot girl. And so he built this story around this robot girl, which actually turned out to be really good. But the first issue and the second issue of the comic, yeah, you're like, that's a little rough.
Yeah.
You're like, well.
Well, Dave, what do you think? I mean, you seem like you've been a little harsh on this, so you're not as happy as I would think you would be.
I mean, like, this is fantastic world building, but it kind of breaks, like, one of my, like, big tenets about movies is, like, don't build a movie banking on a sequel when the future is so uncertain and so many movies are built banking on a sequel that never, ever come.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, movie making 101 that lots of people tend to ignore. And it feels so incomplete. It's like I said at the beginning, it feels like a first and second act. The movie's got wonderful world building. It's got wonderful art. It looks fun. It sets up a lot of stuff. But like there's like only one and a half acts or only one act. It's just like it's like where'd the movie go? Like as soon as it was over, I was like, what? This is it? I mean, I don't know. It didn't resolve for me. And so, I mean, I understand there's supposed to be more of it. And if they had built it like Lord of the Rings and said, oh, look, we got a trilogy plan, it's going to be an epic, and we got this stuff going, like, I feel like knowing for sure there's more, if this would feel a little bit better. But that's nebulous, especially under our current situation with COVID, under the Disney buying out Fox. There's lots of things that will probably prevent this sequel from ever happening, and the 16 Avatar sequels could be among them. I don't know. It's just, I mean, it's not... In a vacuum, it's not great. If it did have this other follow-up, I mean, like, I was really interested to do the podcast after being a little bit let down by the movie, because to hear how the rest of it kind of plays out from Guy and you, Aaron, because you have more breadth of this. I have only the film. I don't know anything else about this product. And as someone who's only seen this, it left me feeling like, what was that it? And that's why I'm a little bit disappointed in the film. I mean, it was beautiful. I really wish it would have left her face alone. I think it would have been a lot better looking at her if her face was normal. The world building was great. It set up a really cool world. It almost seemed like Final Fantasy VII with like Midgar, like the floating city above the ground and the slums. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of cool. It's got very Japanese cyberpunk things going on. The movie was absolutely gorgeous. The acting was great. Discount Wesley Snipes did a really good job. but I mean, for me, like, it's like, it's just like with Star Trek. Like, if the narrative isn't there, it kind of makes it hard for me to enjoy it. And it was like a third of a story.
I think you're right, and I think this was planned. It was hard to believe, though, because seeing that, like you said, 20th Century Fox was bought out by Disney. So does that mean, so Disney has the brand itself? Like, does Disney own Alita now?
Well, I mean, they own...
The answer is yes. That makes Gali a Disney princess. I'm just saying.
I assume whatever 20th Century Fox owned at the time, the rights to make Alita, more Alita films, is transferred to Disney. I don't know if that gets rescinded under the transfer of the company, and Disney would have to reapply to Japan for the rights to do another Alita movie. I don't know the logistics of it. Presumably it just transfers over with the sale of Fox, but I don't know one way or the other.
I guess my thought is that this was definitely it. Yeah, I mean, Edward Norton showing up at the last scene as Nova tells me
you wouldn't pay that much for Edward Norton to do a 5-second scene.
Edward Norton is like super. I love him. I love him. Fight Club was like one of my favorite movies of all time.
You guys didn't recognize him the whole movie.
I did not recognize him until his glasses came off,
which is why they made him take his glasses off.
No. But he only shows up like twice in the whole movie, right? I mean, other than when he takes over,
like short little flashbacks, like whenever Alita's with her friend in the training simulator, they show a picture of him.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, there's like three times you see him in the film.
No, I knew it was him, and I still can't associate, Jennifer Connelly with The Labyrinth unless she's a child. I don't know.
You're just saying.
Yeah. But I knew it was him, so I just find it funny.
You like this movie right from the beginning.
Yeah, but I actually, I want to ask David something. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, if you could replace the last 5 minutes of this film to make it work for what you would, what would make you happy, how would you have liked it to end? Instead of the promise of three sequel,
more. It needs three more hours because they didn't get, you can't do an act 2 and 3 in 5 minutes and have it be satisfactory. Look at End of Discovery Season 1. Look at End of Discovery Season 2. Look at End of Picard. You can't do it. You have to do it right. You can't just cram it into 5 minutes. You can't. You just can't.
It just seems like your biggest issue with it is the way that it ended. The way that it ended about her getting ready to go to Zalem, or at least the promise of her going up there to kill him. So there's no way that you could appreciate this film by changing anything.
You'd have to eviscerate most of it to like make it tell a complete story. You'd have to cut out all the rollerball stuff or like minimize it completely. The movie would be a completely different movie to make it have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Because right now it's just a beginning.
So one of the things that I kind of thought about since you started this, I've been kind of pondering it. The original OVA ends with Hugo falling to his death, because that's the end of the book Iron Maiden. So that makes sense. It's a good, solid ending. It makes a good wrap up to that. So but it's a depressing non-American ending. It can only happen in anime, right? Because, I mean, like...
It's tragic, yeah.
It's tragedy. It ends on a tragedy. You know, it ends with effectively Gali walking off into the desert and being like, well, that's it. I hate you people. You know?
that's I like that ending.
But, Guy, just real quick, because it has been a while for me to read it, too. It wasn't kind of like the end of the first arc with her defeating Zapan. Isn't that was like the big like focus in the beginning, wasn't it? I mean, Nova was already in the mix, but that's what I remember distinctly, her fighting him and being that was like the big boss that she had to get rid of first.
Right. So. I mean, and originally when Kishiro wrote this story, it's clear it was designed to be a not necessarily a Dragon Ball clone, but to hit that same culture, the people who like to see, you know, Goku go out there and beat the crap out of somebody new every week, or as in anybody who actually watches Dragon Ball knows that he doesn't do it every week. It spends like 3 months
fighting at each other, powering up, right? Taking massive dumps. 350
episodes fighting one guy.
Right.
Many shits are taken during these fights.
Right, and it's, you know, it's a Dragon Ball thing. But as time went on, he changed his story type to the Golden Fleece story type, which is, I don't know if anybody's familiar with Snyder's 10 story types, but there's 10, apparently 10 styles of story. And one of them is the Golden Fleece. The character is looking for something. Mm-hmm. And that's when that arc comes to an end. And the first 9 volumes of the manga, the Golden Fleece pretty much is finding herself. She's trying to find herself.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way to... Because she has to find Yoko, which is what her... You know, spoiler alert, that's her name from Mars. She has to find that person inside her. Through the Panzerkunst and the fighting styles that she's been doing and stuff like that, she has to come into touchstone with that, and then later she comes into touchstone with her humanity, and that's really what makes this series beautiful. But you got to go through a lot to get there.
Yeah, and like there's a lot of promise. Like all the flashbacks of her past were super interesting. I would have loved to see more about that. Like it's just the movie just feels so incomplete because it's like we're only starting to learn who she is. We're like just now seeing the real bad guys behind everything really at the end. And it's just like all this stuff, and then it just stops. It's kind of like David
Lee. Yeah, but he's a bad guy through this whole movie, though.
Yeah, but you don't really see.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know how to fix it. She's got so much to get to the end of this Golden Fleece that she's looking for.
Yeah.
That I don't know. I mean, you're right. There's no way to fix it short of. I mean, you could probably do it in a trilogy, but
You'd still be cutting it. You'd still be cutting it short. I mean, it's like David Lynch's Dune. I mean, it's just he did it best he could, but like you can't fit all of Dune into a single movie, and it just kind of stops at the end. It's like what that's it too. Like
yeah, I feel like
the end of Dune is.
The miniseries, that was a better way to handle those.
Oh, except for the costuming on the miniseries was just made me want to claw my eyes out. It was so bad. I mean, like, some stories you just need to, like, look, we're going to make this into 2 movies or 3 movies, and this is going to be, like, you know, like... But, I mean, I know you said there's rumblings that they want to make more, and people can want to make more they want. Whether or not that happens or not is a lot of times up to the bigger wigs of the studios. And the movie didn't make that much money. I mean, like, that's barely breaking even, doubling your budget as far as big movies go. Nowadays, you got to, like, you know, 2.5 times at least to get a sequel. So, I don't know.
Well, and it didn't make much money in Japan either. I mean, it's a popular series. People still read it. But the OAVs, they wanted to make more of the OAVs too, but they made it to exactly the same spot.
Well, just so you know, so this is they definitely said that there's a sequel potential for this So there's a Screen Rant article that says that Robert Rodriguez thinks there's potential to make sequels to this. This is going back over a year now. So, you know, like you said, with the buyout with Disney, who the hell knows, you know, so.
Anything could be happening.
But Holly, let's not lose sight of what you said. Obviously,
well, I still, you know, I asked my David question. I had a question for both you and Guy. Since you guys both read the mangas, I wanted to know if you felt like they were able to tell a good story here. But it kind of sounds like you don't.
I think they did. I think they told the story as best they could for a movie for a Western audience.
Yeah.
And cut down. Manga has got a lot of goofy scenes and, I mean, just stuff that.
Left all the goofy Deckman stuff out, with the Deckman being weird and talking in funny accents and stuff. Left all that out.
There's a lot of stuff that, you know, fat that could be trimmed. And it's, you know, it's cool for a manga that's, you know, as Guy was saying, that's like 14 books long or something like that, because you just can get lost in that world when reading. I mean, it's just, and visually, the art's astounding. You know, it's a beautiful art. So, I mean, it's like, you just love looking and just delving into it. It's a beautiful, beautiful book series. So, you know, it's great to get into. I think they handled the story really well. And yes, there's a longer story. There's a longer story arc. Whether we'll see it or not as a movie, yeah, okay, but maybe not. But this was, I mean, as faithful as you can get. I mean, they, like you know, Guy's been saying that they've changed this detail or that detail or this character a little different. But, you know, it's all there. You know, everything that you need to know is there. So, and if you wanted a more robust story, yeah, then go to the manga. I was going to say you could probably go get them at any Barnes & Nobles, but you can't go to Barnes & Nobles right now because everything's shut down.
I know. I drove by one the other day, and there's not one near me, and I went, oh, babe, I can go to Barnes & No, I can't.
No, I can't!
So and I'm looking forward to the days when I go back to bookstores.
Yeah.
But this is this is one of the manga that I'm allowed to, my wife allows me to actually, like, purchase.
Oh, wow, that's nice. Well, The one thing about
I say that like she's like some kind of no, she's not. but
she accepts it because she knows
this
you're
is funnier if you've ever met my wife. She's like the nicest, sweetest person on the planet. So it's funny that the caricature of her is this, like, you know, slave driver.
Get to work, guy.
The thing is, I think maybe had I known more of the story and seeing how faithful it was, I probably would have appreciated it more for how much it got right. But I'm one of those people that has no knowledge. So I just have to base it on my gut feeling of how I feel about this as a film and a story in itself. Like, I probably should go and read the manga and, like, appreciate it for how it retells the story in its own way or whatever. But just as a fresh eyes, that's just my perspective.
To kind of address where what Holly was asking, for me, I feel like I can't give a good answer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because
you're so biased.
I'm way too biased. This is one of my core manga stories that I mean, that made me into a manga style artist. And so it is at my, like, very base, like the bottom of my everything that builds my entire culture of me. And so I'm just happy to see anything, you know. I'd be happy if they just ran a 5-second commercial, you know. I'd be like, whoa, that's so awesome, and it'd be the best thing ever, and it'd be so cool. Yeah. So I'm too biased to give you an answer to as to whether I feel like it was faithful or not. I mean,
even though it wasn't a true retelling, did you feel like it was a good story?
Yeah, I mean, but it is... It's the same. They pretty much did the exact same story as the OVA with just a little bit of Rollerball. I mean, like, down to even things like Jiren crushing the cockroach, you know, it's like, I don't know why we had to add that. I don't like cockroaches, so I'm like, why'd you have to do that? Why?
It was just an easy way to throw in a tie, I guess.
Yeah, I think they were trying to say Jiren's just mean. Yeah. That's the whole point.
Well, yeah, because that would change, you know, her character is supposed to change to the end of it, where she saves a life rather than takes a takes the life of a cargo.
Good point.
So in the manga, they've got, or in the OAV, they've got a couple of key phrases that she says that makes it sound like she's more cynical and bitter. She's not mean because she's mean. She's cynical and bitter because
she's stuck down below.
She's stuck, right? I mean, she was one of the super rich, super awesome, yada yada yada, and here she is now stuck in Scrapyard City, and that makes her bitter and angry. And the growth of the character that they do in the OVA is that she stops being shallow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was treating life in the OVA as worthless because she's Typhirion. So why would she care about these lowlifes?
Mm.
And that's what the whole arc with Hugo was all about, was because then she's like, oh, well, you know, so Golly has made me realize that, you know, maybe there's value in the life down here, and I'll help you save Hugo.
You don't know.
Which is interesting, because in the manga, it's Golly's idea to hook up her internal heart to Hugo.
Right.
And I was like, that's interesting, because you took that moment away from Golly.
Right. You know, well, she's still young and still figuring herself out. So, I mean, maybe they felt she needed someone to kind of guide her in that direction.
I think so, too. I think
they cut her boyfriend's head off.
They really, in both the OAV and the movie, they played up the Ito making her small and tiny a lot more. That just happened to be an aspect of the bodies that she got in the manga. So she just happened to get a small body because she got that prostitute's body. And so she just happened to have this small body. And then it was, once she got the berserker body was much, much, much more buff. But it trimmed down for her because it started out as a male body. And then it trimmed down for her. And then she wanted to adjust it so it was smaller because she liked to be faster.
Yeah, she probably became used to the size, the petite size of, you know, Alita's body.
Right. And so it's an interesting thing. There's a lot of depth in this story that it's just so, you know, when you ask that question, I'm like, oh, there's so much to this world. There's so much to this universe that is so deep. Not just the, you know, the cyberpunk aspect, but the fact that, you know, what they do with Golly and her the way she goes through life. It's so deep. Answer that. It's so hard. I think the movie is great. I thought the OAV was pretty cool. But honestly, it's hard for me to say whether I think this is great for, like, I can't tell whether it's great for David, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It could be if it was like a series and it was complete and it had a story, an ending, I guess.
Yeah. I think that it needs to be at least Lord of the Rings sized, Hobbit and Lord of the Rings sized, you know, six yes. movies. And, you know, you just move through each movie. Because I think with six movies, you could probably get it in.
I'd be down for it. Because the world, I mean, you got the world set up in the first movie. Now you can continue and just kind of tell the story and the rest of them. It's kind of cool.
Right.
Absolutely.
I'm all on board with this. Okay, Cameron, Rodriguez, you guys need to do five more movies ahead of you.
Do whatever you have to do with the Disney.
Guy green light it.
I green light this, man. I green light it.
Anything else? I mean, other than your thoughts, your feelings, because I know you like this movie, I thought you did.
I like it.
Okay.
So, yeah, there are two things about the film that I didn't like. And one of those was, you know, the way that Hugo's face was CG'd onto the Borg's body. And then the only other thing that I really didn't care for, which I understand why they did it, was, you know, Alita's naive eagerness to give her heart to Hugo. you know, my favorite things about the film, you know, I really did enjoy the story, but I loved, you know, the martial arts. I'm a martial artist, so I really loved it. The technology, cyborgs, I'm totally into the cyberpunk and all that jazz. Mm-hmm. Self-discovery, I always enjoy a good story about self-discovery, and memory loss is always fun. Well, I mean, it's not fun, but...
not fun when it happens to you, but it's fun for other people.
Memory loss is fun.
It's really fun Rebar to help tell a story about self-discovery. It's really fun in that aspect. You know, space battles. Of course, I love the moon. There's a war on the moon, so it was just really cool. I really enjoyed it. Now, you guys all pretty much know that I'm not, like... huge into, oh, I need female role models. But I do know that they really wanted people, they kind of promoted this as like a girl power kind of film. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to build the, and I guess it's a big thing for both Rodriguez and Cameron, that they like to build strong female characters. Okay. And I guess I just didn't like the whole giving the heart over thing because of that. I guess, I don't know, it didn't seem like something I would do. But I guess I'm a little more guarded.
You're more of the Hugo.
It's kind of like the
how they did, well, I don't know about that.
It's kind of like how they did Wonder Woman, where like they built this up as this girl power movie, but they also had her fall in love with Steve Trevor. And I know that's part of the comic books, but it seems kind of the antithesis to that she kind of needed a man in a movie that's talking about I don't need a man, or like.
Wait. A woman can fall in love with a man, just she doesn't need the man to come save her.
Yeah, right. I know, but it just, I felt like they could have, I don't know.
It didn't need to be without a love interest. I didn't mind that at all. I just the whole idea of, I don't care if I die. I just want you to be happy, which, you know, that's a really good testament to the character, the type of person that she is. Mm-hmm. But it's just not something that I was just like, oh, that's, you know, that for a young girl who, you know, you're trying to build this amazing role model for young girls, this is the first boy she's ever had any interest in, she's already giving her heart away and she doesn't care if she dies. I'm like, okay, that's mixed messages. That's not a good one to get mixed up.
I agree, but I also,
by the way, that's added in the movie.
What's that?
That scene is added in the movie.
Yeah, I don't remember that being...
Okay. Well, in the manga, she's doing his laundry. So I can see why this doesn't go over as well in the manga.
But, right. You know, what I liked about that scene...
What are all these stains on your underwear?
Just saying.
Those are my poo-poo stains.
What are the white sticky ones?
We're all like, dude.
He went there.
Jennifer Connelly.
Jennifer Connelly was here. So if you, the thing is, I just want to, my feeling on that was the pure innocence of it. Cause I mean, I'm not gonna say everybody here on this podcast, when you first fell in love with whoever your first love was, you were like, I would do anything for that person. I would give him my, rip my own heart. Yeah. It's very Romeo Juliet kind of thing. And, you know, I kind of liked it in its own innocence way. I thought it was a little over the top, but I liked how Hugo kind of was like, you don't want to do that. And
you can't, you know, people suck. You can't, which I liked. But that was another thing I was going to say, though, before, unless you wanted to continue talking.
No, go ahead. Your turn.
I didn't feel like, I mean, there was a lot going on in the film. They couldn't focus on too many other things about all the things they already focused on, like cockroaches. But Hugo, Hugo's growth, like he did, he too went from this very narrow-minded, well, not necessarily narrow-minded, but, you know, he was hacking up cyborgs. Then he falls in love with one.
He's a scoundrel.
Which he's just, yeah, and he was, you know, trying to get to Zom, that's all he wanted, and then at the end, you know, she's like, it doesn't matter where we live as long as we're together, and she's like, right? And actually, I saw in the storyboard, they actually had that the opposite, like, she was going up the tube, and he went after her, and he was saying, hey, we can, as long as we live together, like, just come back down, like, you don't have to do this. Mm-hmm. But I didn't see... They didn't focus on Hugo, so when he does decide that he's not going to you know, be a crook anymore. It's like, okay, why did he make that decision? How did he finally come to terms with the fact that he doesn't, you know, he still tries to get to Zalem. So, like, yeah. Why did he decide not to, you know, hack up cyborgs? Was it, you know, some thought about the fact that he's in love with one? What is it? Because he makes the decision after he talks to, what's his name? Vector. And so it's like, what prompted this decision? Because it wasn't clear. And so that kind of bugged me. It was like, okay, he just decided to do this.
That's a good point. Like, what, I mean, what was the, other than just like, Iron City is supposed to be a shitty place to live. Yeah, but I mean, like, what is the burning desire to get up to Zalem so bad? It's like, we don't even know what it's like up there.
It could be just as bad.
Yeah.
Well, so, yeah, and it's actually kind of funny because all of this is actually explained. So apparently up on Tepheras in Zalem, it's a utopia. Everybody mm-hmm. is living perfectly and you don't have any problems and nobody, they've got the ability to regrow your entire body. So you don't have to have,
so it's like Elysium
android parts and, you know, it's stuff like carbon. That. So it's a wonderful, apparently. And you see characters like, I mean, Chiron is made up for the movie, but there are other characters like her in mm-hmm. the story, which talk about how they've been ejected and it is horrible down here and it is wonderful up there, yada, yada, yada. So you're getting kind of the reinforcement that they live on the sucky part of town. Mm-hmm. So this is all about, initially when Kishiro was doing this, he was living in a one-bedroom apartment in the middle of Tokyo and it was horrible. I mean, he's talked about this a number of times. This is his way of thinking, gosh, I'd love to live a better life that didn't involve me living in a one-bedroom apartment in the middle of Tokyo. Mm. So, in a way, you know, he was in Scrapyard City and he wished to live in Tepheras, and that was his whole, this is his wish fantasy. Now, of course, he lives in a wonderful place because this series is very popular. He makes a lot of money. So he managed to make it a reality. Mm. But it's, as far as like the other part of this, you were asking, what's the point behind, or what was the motivation behind Hugo? His brother in the original manga wanted to get up to Tepheras. So as a young child, he was impressed upon with that.
Yeah.
And so it was, you know, his brother and his brother's wife and... that was who he was living with when they grew up and they had a child and stuff like that. So, I mean, there was like, there's a cousin in there and, you know, all kinds of things going on.
Yeah.
But the movie guy, I mean, just, we're just purely on the movie. It's like, first, you know, he's hacking up cyborgs for parts to save up money to get up to the city. He meets Alita, you know, has this kind of change of heart. And after he has the encounter with Zapan and trying to get out of that life, all of a sudden he's just like, screw it. I'm just going to walk up there myself and try to do it.
Yeah.
And it's
it's really weird how it doesn't fit.
I mean, he's an idiot.
it's funny because I guess this is like a cautionary tale. I mean, it's the same argument we've all had about Lord of the Rings or, Game of Thrones or whatever. You know, they have to cut you can't tell the whole thing.
Yeah.
There's not enough time. You'd have a 12-hour movie, you know? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so just to get the first couple of books out would be a 12-hour movie. So, you know, I'm reading through the pages here. It's like that scene that we're talking about. You know, she says, say you go, how much money do you need to get to Zalem? And she says, I love the way you look up at the sky. So I just can't tell you to give up on your dream, but at least I can hope that I can be by your side. Even if it's just fussing over you for now, which is what she's doing. She's doing his laundry, right? Mm. But then she goes out and starts killing everybody. And she starts, like, gathering up, you know, bounties. because she could do that easily. So the next page is her like happily and blissfully with a great smile on her face chopping heads off.
Right. You
know? It's the most like disorienting page, right? So she you know, it's 10 million credits to get up to Zalem, and she's like, I can make that in a month. Mm-hmm. So she does. Yeah, that's the whole thing. So she does that to keep him from doing any more of having to jack people. But then he decides that's not a good idea.
That's a common theme in a lot of manga, though, because I, you know, Appleseed the same way.
Yep.
What's her name? Dutana, the main character in there in Appleseed. She Duana. Thank you. She's a fierce warrior, but when she's Brios, she's just like, I love you.
Right? She becomes an idiot. And that's probably more, I would say, a result of the Japanese culture.
Yeah.
Because even when you have strong female characters, there's a certain like underlying belief about second-class citizenship in Japan for women.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having... But they've got a tradition. They've got an ancient tradition of women samurai, and you know, kunoichi, which are women ninja. Mm-hmm. And I mean, so they've got a tradition of women being strong, and so I think they offset it to justify their second class citizenship women. And I don't mean to be mean to Japan, but I lived there, and I saw this in action. They have a real problem still.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Rectifying how to deal with women, and especially women who are strong. And so they have this issue with it. I think one of the ways they do it is by saying, well, you know, women, they can be strong, but their weak spot is falling in love with people. And I think that's the only way they're doing it, is to try to justify it.
That's funny.
And you get breakout artists. Kashiro, like I said, Kashiro was like that for the first couple of books. Mm-hmm. But then he decides that Alita's done with guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when Figure Four gets in there, Figure Four has to work really hard to make Alita even notice him, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he's being a jerk and stupid. And that's what actually, strangely enough, Alita finds attractive, is that he's just stupid. And it's funny to her, and she finds it funny. And so she's attracted to him because he's silly. And, you know, and that's kind of a funny way of that changing. But that's one of the things that does make Alita a strong female character archetype, is because, but it doesn't in the first two issues. You're not going to get it there, because I think Kashiro is still in that old mindset. And that's one of the reasons why I love the series.
Right. Well, I don't know. What else? Anything else that you were thinking for this?
You know, I liked the ending. So, suck it.
You're just saying.
I felt that, you know, at the ending, it was more of a statement that she was declaring, I know who the fuck I am. This is who I am, and I'm coming for you. And I felt that was fine. I'm good with it. That's enough of an ending for me, you know, to do the same thing. Sometimes a statement means more than to the person who's making it than the person who's hearing it, or an onlooker. So I just, you know, I felt that it was a fine ending. And yeah, we want more, and that's the whole point of a movie. If you want to make more, you leave it so that people want more. I understand why you would feel that it was unsatisfying, but for me, I'm satisfied with it, because again, the story is about self-discovery and deciding who you want to be. You know, Hugo wanted to live a great, happy life. He discovered he could do that with Alita. You know, Ito wanted his daughter. He couldn't have that. He just, you know, he found Alita, and or 99, whatever you want to refer to her as. And we're talking about the daughter, too. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's all about discovery and deciding who you're going to be. And he decided that he was not going to, you know, after, you know, he was, Ito was so against rollerball because he was a technician for the sport, and that's how his daughter got murdered. Some junky cyborg who used to rollerball comes in looking for drugs. So he decided what kind of person he was going to be. He was going to be the kind of person who helped people who couldn't afford it. And, you know, he was going to live in poverty, and that made him happy. And that was his declaration of screw you, Zalem. And so I just felt like it ended perfectly fine. So I guess I just see it differently. And also I haven't read the mangas. So
there's that. Right. Well, that's good, because actually it seems like we get kind of a semi-mixed review, because you and David both didn't read the manga, and Aaron and I did. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that, you know, Aaron and I are kind of biased, so...
Yeah, it's okay.
Which is all right.
Just have the source material, so that's great. There's two of you guys who are
unbiased, right? And so that makes it...
I don't know. David doesn't like anything.
That's true. He's the Mikey of our podcast.
Give me a good story and I'll like it. Fight Club's a great movie. The Boys was a great show.
Like The Boys. I couldn't finish it.
The Boys was freaking amazing.
What I liked about this, first, I thought they held to the, like I said before, I think they held the story as best they can to translate to a movie, to a Western audience, and cut, like I said, cut down the things that don't need to be there, you know? Sure. So I thought that was great. I was thinking, I don't think I ever thought about this when I was reading the manga, but I think I mentioned before, it reminded me of the story of Paradise Lost, where everyone's trying to, you know, the idea of, you know, they're trying to get up to, well, Satan is thrown out of heaven after the war, and he has a war in heaven, try to take over heaven. He's thrown down to hell, and he goes to the paradise earth and the paradise of Eden there, and you know, puts the fruit in front of Eve for her to, you know, be tempted, all that stuff, and all the fallout because of that. And just like the idea of you're in a shitty place, you want to get to something better, and that you're chasing after something maybe you don't have, and you're trying to get after something that you don't have, and unfortunately, you're never going to obtain that kind of thing. So, I don't know. I saw a lot of parallels while I was watching it. I never thought about it before. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that rings true to anybody else, if that feels, but it seems like...
Oh, yeah. I can definitely see the feel of that, for sure. It's very much... trying to get back to what you lost, or getting back to what's better.
Right. And, you know, as for the Alita's character herself, you know, obviously she's searching for something, but at the same time, she's just in the moment and enjoying the moment, which I think is good too, because a lot of times we see people with memory loss and they're always like tortured. They're always like, I mean, I just go to like the Wolverine Logan story where he's like, I don't know my past and I don't know what's, I have no past. I don't know anything about, you know, it's like, he's always upset about it. And it's like, she
gets to discover oranges and chocolate. And
yeah. She's
sunsets,
yeah,
she's, and
falling in love and fighting and all that stuff. So all these things are like cool to her for the first time. So it's cool.
She gets to live.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of neat.
That's a good way to put it.
I like that aspect of it. And I don't remember if that was even a thing in the manga as much. I don't remember that being a part of it, other than her, obviously she's trying to remember her past at some point, but it's not a huge thing of her rediscovering everything, not to my knowledge. So, so it was a nice take on all that too. So it was a human aspect that I enjoyed. So I agree a little bit with Dave that it would have been great if this has another movie to wrap this up, even three or two other movies, like I'd make this in a trilogy. That'd be great. Who knows if that will even happen, but I was happy where it ended, because it kind of ended sort of in the same place anyways. So, in the manga, so it didn't bother me as much. So I think this is a great movie. Visually, it's beautiful. Story-wise, acting, I mean, I don't know. Nothing bothered me in this movie whatsoever. And it's just huge action romp. So
Yeah, it's so much fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, so.
I don't know. Anything else we want to say about this movie?
I don't know.
How many people need to go, like, buy the manga and read it?
Right.
I would definitely pick up at least the first book, maybe the second one, too, and then see how you like it, you know. They're not that expensive, I don't think. I can't remember last time I bought them. The short little books.
The big guys are $30, but
no, the short it's books, worth it. The small books, right?
These little guys are 10 each.
Yeah, and you read them probably in a couple days. You know, you can get through it, but they're thick. There's a lot of story to go through.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's and the art's beautiful.
Just gorgeous. So gorgeous.
Really cool. And it's all black and white.
A bit of it. So yeah.
Yeah. It's all black and white, so
it's manga. There are like one or two color pages, as is usual with manga.
Mm-hmm.
So manga, they'll do the first 1, 2, 3 pages in color. So and the rest of the chapter is usually in black and white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's definitely worth checking out. I've never seen the anime of this. It's
hard to get a hold of now. In fact, that's why I was like, oh, that's right, I got to show you this LD. The fact that I actually have the LD is extraordinarily rare these days.
Right.
Yeah,
it's probably one of the most valuable things in this house.
Nice.
You're like, where do you look at?
And that address is...
Great. I'm glad we had a chance to talk about this.
I am too. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, it's fun getting out of the Star Trek wheelhouse every now and then.
We do have to make the just side note that Rosa Salazar then played Captain Lucero on the short Trek, The Trouble with Edward,
mm-hmm.
which was awesome because I'm a fan of Rosa Salazar now. Right. So I was like, yeah! It's Captain Battle Angel.
Captain Battle Angel.
The USS Battle Angel.
Yeah. Lots of tribbles, right? Yeah. Exactly. Good stuff. Well, Guy, tell everyone where they can find you in case they haven't heard this before.
Right. You can find me pretty much everywhere at GS Davis Art. I've got my website, gsdavisart.com, and I'm on pretty much every social media thing that I can get my hands on at GS Davis Art, although I don't broadcast as well as I'm trying to learn that. You can find my other podcast, Rocky Mountain Geek Tank, at rockymountaingeektank.com. We also broadcast on Thursday nights like we were talking about earlier. Well, actually, we weren't on the recording at that point, but we were talking about before we were recording. find us on Facebook at Rocky Mountain Geek Tank, and you can find us on Instagram, and I think we have a Twitch channel now, too.
You guys went into a whole anime rabbit hole last Thursday, too.
I know. We really did. That was prompted because when we do our live shows, you can interact with us. Mm-hmm. And one of our viewers was talking about going into this, about early anime and stuff. And so that was a fun show. I'm fascinated by it.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It was fun. It was fun listen. As for us, you can find us at Synthaholics.com. You can subscribe to us at any of your podcasting places, either Apple Podcast or Stitcher or whatever, wherever else. Also, you can find us on Facebook. You can join our group there at Facebook.com/groups/Synthaholics. Join us there. We're always talking about Star Trek, and we'll probably be talking about Alita a little bit too. As well, you can join us on Twitter at Synthaholic Duo, and we have our Instagram. We have Synthaholics.podcast. That's correct, I believe. And if the show is something you'd like to support, please go to our Patreon.com/Synthaholics, and you can throw us some money that way. That's appreciated. And as always, just a great way to support the show is to share the show either on social media or by word of mouth. We appreciate any of that. Guys, great topic. I'm glad we could talk about it. I hadn't seen it since it came out, since it's just hard to see movies sometimes, and this was a great thing to do, especially to break up the you know, out of the Star Trek thing once in a while. So
Brian, thank you for having me on board.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, thanks.
Great to have you. Guys, we will catch up with you next week, and we'll probably be back into Star Trek world.
We're just saying.
We might be.
What? Trekkie's talking about Star Trek? That never happens.
No way.
We should just do a Vampire Hunter D.
Oh, yeah, there you go. All right, guys. Well, as always, keep safe, keep healthy, wear your masks, and live long and prosper, one and all. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Wash your hands.
Cut off the face. Your hands, people.
Nice.
You don't want to know what I did to afford this glove that I used to crush that cockroach.
Oh, no. Stupid cockroach scene. Why did they have to save that?
Well, you saved that scene, didn't you?
You know what's funny and relatable?
Like, I don't like cockroaches.
What's funny about that scene and the fact that we're dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic is that at least she knew to throw the fucking glove away.
That's hilarious.
Right?
Right? She's
Whereas just like, cheering in the oi, she doesn't do that. It's just
so weird for me to watch movies where there's large crowds of people, and I'm like, what is this, science fiction? Right? People can't be that close together.
I'm still stuck with humans, so I don't know.
So it's weird because, really. I'm like the guy who goes out and gathers all the supplies. So I get them for my mother-in-law because she's like it just in her 70s. My father-in-law and I get them for us, obviously. And I get all masked up and everything, wear gloves. But this last time I went out, it just wore on me. I was like, oh, I'm so tired of doing this. You know, like just being all, I just feel like I'm in a moon suit or something like that. I'm just like, it just got old on me that day. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
I just wear a mask. I don't do gloves. I just
wear a mask too.
Yeah. You know, I'll wear long sleeves when I'm out just so I can kind of take it off, throw it in the hamper. But
I can hit stop. I usually record some for outtakes, but I can stop.
Oh, that's fine. My wife's in here.
I need vengeance on anything and anyone.
Oh, no wonder you're so excited about hearing about my thing. It's like, I can take vengeance on that.
And what? You're not. What? I can do that? That'd be great.
Vengeance is mine, saith the O'Brien.
So you're
idle hands. So it's been rough being bored out of your mind. Actually, today was a very productive day art-wise, Guy.
Oh, good. Hey, you've been doing a lot of art. I've been seeing a lot of that.
Every time laugh, necklace bangs against your lamp, and I don't know if it's getting picked up or not.
Oh, gotcha.
And it's sitting there going, ding, 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 ding.
I'm so used to it that I have, these are my Mardi Gras beads, which I got one set of Mardi Gras.
Is there something we don't know about you?
Oh,
he takes his shirt off every Mardi Gras.
Come on, really? It's Mardi Gras.
He's got Battle Angel pasties.
Did it come up in the podcast that's the movie we watched for Valentine's Day?
No, we didn't talk about that. That was our Valentine's Day thing.
Hey, it'll be in the outtakes, though. I'm recording, so we can put that in the outtakes.
Because I feel like that's
significant.
That's an important point.
Right.
Yeah.
It also shifts our relationship that both you and I are like, hey, for Valentine's, you want to go see a movie about a robot? That'd be awesome.
Everyone who made it to the outtakes, our special guest, Guy's wife.
Guy's wife.
What's her first
name? That's great. That's awesome.
Podcast while you guys were podcasting.
Yeah. Seems to be a thing we do.
Podcastception.
That's awesome.
She has a podcast as well?
Well, she's one of the people on Very Scary with Jerry McCrary, which is
the improv show that is parodying Art Bell Coast to Coast.
Mm. Right.
Get the fuck out.
Oh,
what is it?
Very Scary with Jerry McCrary.
Why do I not know this?
Because it's not very big, and so far we're still kind of working out the kinks.
If you need a crazy guest to talk about moon shoes or something, I would be crazy. I can.
Oh yeah. I feel like that would that's a.
They're going to have me on the show as the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh man! So. Like I would be so happy to come on the show and just be a crazy whack job because Guy can tell you how crazy I get.
Wait, yeah. But see, you're already
crazy.
I know.
Right? Last stretch.
It is one of my guilty pleasures to listen to Coast AM. I used to listen to all the time, especially years ago. I used to do like pizza delivery. Aww. And so when at night, when my shift was over at like 1-2 in the morning after delivering pizzas all night, I would I'd be driving around and I'd be listening to Coast to Coast AM talking about UFOs, Bigfoots, ghosts, all that stuff. And it just was just surreal. And I loved every minute of it. It's just great. And it's so awesome.
What's the name of the podcast again? I'm trying to look it up. I need to listen to
this. It's Very Scary with Jerry, which is spelled with the G, McCrary.
But I don't know how much promotion he's done on it yet. So yeah, it might be
you know what? I'm going to just bring up the link and give it to you guys because I'm sure there's probably easier.
Do that.
Because he's not good at promotion. He's a musician, and he's a great musician. He's a folk musician, the guy who plays Jerry McCrary. He's a folk musician, and he does he's got a great voice. It's, you know, very rich and deep. And, you know, he's got this wonderful voice, so hang on. Let's see. Very Scary with Jerry McCrary. So does he just have an outside?
I don't know, actually.
Because this is a private
group. It's on SoundCloud.
On SoundCloud.
I don't know, Kai. We're trying to...
You're asking questions while we're doing something else.
Okay.
So...
You can introduce yourself, though.
Hello.
Hiya.
Hello.
Hello from Buffalo, New York.
Buffalo, New York. I'm David Duncan.
The smallest Star Trek fan in the house.
Yeah. nice. Yeah, so David and Aaron are in Buffalo, and Holly is in California. Where in California are you?
I'm on Camp Pendleton, so I'm like right between L.A. and San Diego.
Right. Oh, yeah. But that's south of the Presidio, by a long ways. So do you know where LA is and where San Francisco is, Kai?
Yeah. I've been to San Francisco when I was growing up.
I was asking Kai whether he knew it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all good. Do you know where LA is?
Yep.
Do you know where San Francisco is?
Yep.
Okay, so she's between those two.
Okay.
So this is the widest podcast ever. Aaron,
we are coast to coast,
New York. And
we are coast to coast. Yes,
we're here in Denver.
Coast to coast and Denver.
Yeah,
and Denver.
I think actually, it might be worth just like checking with David to see where to find the actual episodes. He's got some of them up on SoundCloud.
Yeah, I'm gonna actually PM him right now.
I'm like looking in Apple Podcasts, and I can't find it.
Yes, no, it's not. He doesn't have that,
which is a shame. I'm gonna have to help him.
He needs help. It's all about the content and not about the promotion. And I don't care. I just go on as his bitchy producer.
Ex-wife. I like the fact that you're his ex-wife.
Yes.
That cracks me up.
I'm telling you, I know all about like UFOs and all that stuff just because I listen to so many of those on the show. It's great. I love it.
Oh, it's so amazing. Oh man.
I think I'm going to, cause these guys are great. And they've got like all of our improv actors from my Troy, you know, Troy, my co-host. Mm-hmm. He used to do improv here. That's how we actually all met, is through the improv group. Nice. And so he used to do improv, like we'd go to shows and do the shows and stuff like that, coffee shops. And so all of these guys that are in this are all these improv actors.
That's awesome.
So it really is good because they're all good at what they do and they're funny. Mm-hmm.
If you can find the episode with, it's the Beelzebub or Beelzebuffs. It's the Satan Jim.
The Satan Gym.
The Satan Museum.
Oh, yeah.